Bhagavad Lila, 10th Canto, Chapter 44, The Killing of Kamsa. This chapter describes the killing of Kans, the wrestlers, the consolation of Kansa's grieving wives, and Krishna and Balaram's meeting their parents, Vasudeva and Devaki. Thinking with determination, Charchita Sankalpa, I will kill Chanur, Krishna approached that massive wrestler. Seizing each other's hands and locking legs with each other, Krishna and Chanur struggled powerfully, eager for victory. They struck fists against fists, knees against knees, heads against heads, and chest against chest. Krishna made a fist with all the fingers except his pinky finger. Wrestling with such a pair of fists is very difficult and unheard of. Wrestling is usually done with open hands. Nevertheless, just as Krishna invented new ways of playing on the flute, as stated in the Bhagavatam 10.35.14, Veno Vadya Urudha Nija Shiksha, Krishna also fought in this novel way with great skill. Though Chanur experienced great difficulty with this, he accepted this style out of pride in his own ability as a heroic wrestler. One wrestler would grab the other by the hands and whirl him around, and they would shove each other back and forth and crush each other with one's arms. Sometimes they would throw down each other on the ground. They would release and run in front of one another and go behind, and this way they counteracted each other's moves. They were pressing together the knees and feet of a fallen opponent and picking him up from the ground. They would lift the opponent with one's hand and carry him around. And then they would push away the opponent who was holding onto one's throat. At other times, they would fix themselves firmly on the ground so that the opponent could not move them. Thus attacking one another, they injured even their own bodies. Although Krishna and Balaram did not, of course, harm themselves, it appeared that way to the spectators. The women in the audience discussed the unfairness of the match between the towering, powerful, strong Chanur and Mushtika and the weak young boys Krishna and Balaram. Their compassion was a symptom of their natural affection for Krishna. Because of that Vatsalya Bhav, they were unaware of Krishna and Balaram's superior strength. The women speak for 10 verses. If the king sees a fight between young boys and strong adults, he should stop it. When the spectators see that the king is watching, they follow suit and simply watch. The king desires to watch and they imitate him. What comparison can there be made between these two professional wrestlers with thunderbolt limbs and mountain-like bodies and these two immature boys with tender limbs? While describing the soft bodies of Krishna and Balaram, the women pointed with their fingers. Certainly there is irreligion in this assembly, so no one should stay here. We should immediately leave this place. Another group of women spoke, quoting the rules of the scriptures. We have committed offense by coming here. If someone knows that there is injustice in an assembly and remains silent, or else speaks contrary to religious principles, or acts as if ignorant, saying, I don't know, even though one does in fact know, in any of these cases he will certainly incur sin. Therefore, he should not enter the assembly. This prohibition against entering the assembly is for the wise person who is concerned with worldly activities, but not for the wise person who is indifferent to such. For example, Mahabharata explains that during a gambling match, when Draupadi suffered her misfortune in the royal assembly, wise men like Bhishma, who were concerned with worldly affairs, simply stood silently, whereas the learned Vidura, who was indifferent to worldly affairs, exclaimed, and you talk about religious duty? Thus all the wise persons in the wrestling arena were afraid of Kamsa, because they were overly attached to worldly affairs. The ladies go on, but Krishna, do not appear to be fatigued from all this strenuous wrestling. There seems to be no fault in this wrestling match, since Krishna and Balaram seem to be very strong. Anticipating such an objection, the mature ladies speak in this verse, see, due to being pursued here and there by his opponent, Krishna is showing fatigue and has perspiration all over his moon-like face. Don't you see Balaram's face with copper-red eyes from his anger towards Mushtika? His beauty and its beauty enhanced by laughter and absorption in the fight? Now the wives of the yogic brahmanas express their prem, which is mixed with awareness of Krishna's opulence, Aishwarya Gyan, due to their torment of not having Krishna's association. Becoming intolerant of the unjust behavior of the onlookers, the ladies condemn the city of Mathura because of their pain at seeing Krishna in what they consider an unfair wrestling match. Thus they praise Braj and its inhabitants, and by that criticize Mathura and its residents, saying, how astonishing it is! Materialistic people cannot understand the human-like form that Krishna displays in Braj. Krishna wanders around, engaging in various playful activities, according to his own desires. We in Mathura are most unfortunate because we simply persecute him like this. And these people are simply watching. Though Braj is just a forest, it is most fortunate, for Krishna plays his flute there and blissfully engages in pastimes as the Brijvasis look on with bliss. They go on. Anyone who has accumulated heaps of pious activity can be born in the land of Braj. Among them, the gopis are the best. What austerities do the gopis do? If anyone is omniscient, then please tell us what austerities the Brajagopis performed. We will perform the same austerities and be born as gopis in Braj. The beautiful damsels of Braj drink the nectar of Krishna's beauty, while we at this arena drink the poison of his injuries. We sit here filled with fever from the tips of our nails to the ends of our hair. The ladies go on. We should not say that Krishna is most excellent because of his superior beauty. Rather, the essence of all beauty is his very sarup. Lavanyasaram is what the verse says. But it may be objected, since Krishna's form is being exhibited on the earth, which is inferior to his own spiritual realms, therefore, the beauty of Lord Narayan in Mahavaikuntha, the best of the worlds, must be even sweeter than this. To this objection, the ladies reply with the word asamurdva, asamurdvam, which means there is no beauty equal to Krishna's, what to speak of any greater beauty. But then, from where did Krishna acquire this beauty? Then they answer, Ananya Siddham. He is self-perfect. Such beauty is eternally innate in Krishna. That may be so, but if the Brajagopis are constantly seeing this one form, it will no longer be so amazing after some time. And the ladies reply, no, Krishna's form becomes newer at every moment. Anusava Abhinavam. It is forever increasingly amazing. So, if this is the case, then the women of all other lands should go there and take pleasure in seeing Krishna. No, the ladies reply, this form is unattainable even for Goddess Lakshmi. Granted, Krishna's beauty is super excellent, is his super excellent quality. But Narayan and others possess the full measure of six opulences and are designated as Bhagavan. The ladies of Mathura counter this objection by saying, Ekanta Dham, in this verse, number 14. Krishna alone is the exclusive abode and topmost reservoir of all the six opulences, beginning with fame, yashasa, beauty, shriya, and so forth. The ladies of Braj are most fortunate women, because even while doing their household chores, the gopis were not stopped from drinking the nectar of Krishna's sweetness. While milking the cows and other chores, such as swinging or sprinkling water on the ground, the Brajagopis would sing about Krishna's name, form, and qualities and have visions of Krishna. In this way, the cowherd damsels of Braj taste the sweetness of Krishna with both their tongues and their eyes without interruption. Exalted personalities like Brahma keep Krishna in their minds. Krishna himself, however, due to being completely attached, anuraktadiya, to the Brajagopis, always carries them in his heart, urukram chityana. This shows the supremacy of the gopis' good fortune. When Krishna goes to the forest from Braj in the morning and returns in the evening, the gopis in the village hear his flute and run out of their houses. They meet Krishna in the small groves situated along the cow paths. Seeing that they are suffering due to separation, Krishna mercifully glances upon them to fulfill their desires. This is the fortune of the women of Braj. Though the ladies of Mathura in the wrestling arena were talking among themselves, Krishna, being the best of yogis, could hear everything they said. Thus, he decided at that moment to kill Chanura in order to keep these ladies, who were very much attached to him, from suffering. Out of lamenting over the situation, Krishna's parents were thinking, why didn't we keep our sons at home? When leaving Braj, why didn't we tell Akrura not to bring Krishna and Balaram to this wrestling arena? Why did we allow them to participate in this corrupt exhibition? The Vatsalya Bhav, parental affection, of Krishna's mother Devaki and father covered their awareness of their son's incomparable strength, and thus they felt remorse. The suggestion is that this ignorance of their son's powers was temporary. Krishna fought with Chanura, and Balaram fought with Mustika. Krishna injured Chanura's limbs with hard blows, crushing like lightning bolts. Chanura struck Krishna on the chest with clenched fists. Krishna grabbed Chanura by his arms, swung him around several times, and hurled him onto the ground with great force. His clothes, hair, and garlands scattering, the wrestler fell down dead, like a huge column falling on the ground. Balaram struck Mustika with his palm, and Mustika fell down dead on the earth. Balaram also crushed him with his embrace and uttered foul words as he lay dying. Other wrestlers came to fight Krishna and Balaram, Kuta, Shala, Toshala. And Balaram nonchalantly killed Kuta with a blow from his left fist. Krishna kicked the wrestler Shala in the head with his toes, breaking it in two halves. And the wrestler Toshali finished in the same way. And the remaining wrestlers ran away in fear. Then Krishna called the coward boys, who quickly came and surrounded them and congratulated them while dancing and sporting to the accompaniment of their musical instruments. Everyone in the audience clapped and rejoiced in ecstasy. And the Brahmins exclaimed, excellent, excellent. Very good, very good. This is very good, this is very good. These are the best of the Brahmins. The good Brahmins. Vipramukya. But the worst of the Brahmins, who were Kamsa's low-class priests, they were seriously grieving. Oh, what misfortune! What has happened? Seeing his best wrestlers killed, Kamsa ordered the drums being beaten to celebrate Krishna's victory to stop. Then he commanded, "Drive these wicked sons of Vasudeva out of Mathura!" Of course, according to the inspiration of Saraswati, the goddess of learning, this statement actually means, "Give these two boys of unattainable qualities the best position in the city. Protect Krishna, the treasure of the coward men, who is that most intelligent Nanda Maharaj, has tied up with the ropes of love for Krishna and established an affectionate relationship with him." And Kamsa went on, "Kill that most evil Vasudev and kill my father Ugrasen, along with his followers of all siding with our enemies." This verse could also mean something else. The Sanskrit could be taken in opposite meaning. Everyone here should take shelter of Vasudev, who has unfathomable intelligence. There is no one more saintly than him. And you should also take shelter of Ugrasen, who has taken shelter of the Supreme Lord. While Kamsa was raving so audaciously, Krishna became extremely angry, hearing this enmity addressed to his devotees. Unlike ordinary living entities, Krishna does not lose his power of discrimination when he is intensely angry. Krishna jumped up so quickly on the royal dais that no one even saw him do it. Seeing Krishna approaching like personified death, quick-witted Kamsa jumped up and took his sword and shield, moved quickly like a hawk, side to side. But Krishna powerfully seized the demon like Tarksha might capture a snake, grabbing Kamsa by the hair and knocking off his crown. Krishna threw him onto the ground, onto the wrestling mat. Then Krishna threw himself upon the fallen body of Kamsa so that his own body would not be injured by hitting the ground. Krishna, wanting to kill Kamsa, at that moment thought of himself as the shelter of the universe, Vishvashraya, which was burdened by Kamsa. As a lion drags a dead elephant, Krishna dragged Kamsa's body along the ground in full view of everyone present. And everyone cried out, "Oh, oh!" The spectators thought that Kamsa had simply been knocked unconscious because he was thrown off the lofty dais. They did not think he was dead. So just to convince everyone and make them realize that Kamsa was indeed dead, Krishna dragged his body. And everyone was surprised. Ha, 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 ha! Because although Kamsa was such a great warrior, he was killed with such disdain. The entire arena became filled with cries of astonishment as the people saw that the king of Mathura had been contemptuously killed by Krishna. Although born of fear, Kamsa's constant meditation on Krishna, whether he was eating or drinking or moving about or sleeping or breathing, eradicated all his offenses, and therefore the demon got liberation. Kamsa's eight brothers pursued Krishna to absolve the debt to their elder brother and avenge his death. Balaram killed them all. Kettle drums resounded in the sky, and the women cried out, "Hey Nath Priyadharma Gya, Karananath Vatsala, Twaya Hatena Nihata, Bayam Te Sa Griha Praja." "Alas, O Master, O dear one, O knower of religious principles, O kind and compassionate protector of the shelterless, by your being slain, we have also been slain together with your household and offspring." These were the wives of Kamsa lamenting, and they were, this was the daughter of Jarasandha. They're speaking, along with our houses and offspring, we have all now been killed along with you. Taking compassion on Kamsa's relatives and widowed wives, Krishna consoled everyone as far as possible and arranged for the funeral rites to be performed. Krishna and Balaram released their mother and father from bondage and offered obeisances to them by touching their heads to their feet. However, knowing Krishna and Balaram to be the lords of the universe, Vasudeva and Devaki did not embrace them, but simply stood there with folded hands. Being aware of the custom that parents do not bow down to their children, Vasudeva and his wife Devaki did not offer obeisances to Krishna. Paralyzed from fear, they simply stood there.